Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, Irish acting royalty Lorcan Cranage on his new movie The Three Urns and being in the business for over 45 years and that famous role as DC Beck in Cracker. All the week's new cinema releases, including You, Me and Tuscany, and the new Jim Jarmusch movie, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother. And of course, all the TV you'll want to stream or skip. You can email the show, screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m, although it's coming to you later this week at the time of 9 p.m. due to sporting fixtures. Good weekend to you all. I do hope you're doing well in another very strange, unsettling week. But we don't have to talk about any of that now. You're here for movies and TV. And in fact, I was on the Claire Byrne show on Thursday talking about the best space movies. And I was coming into a show that was full of politicians and protesters and reporters at protest sites. And I was sitting in studio waiting to go on air and there was just all this stuff happening. And then I came in, you know, to talk about space movies like a court jester juggling the balls. But you know, that's okay. Know your place in the world. I'm happy being a ball juggler. The world needs us ball jugglers. So that's a metaphor for, you know, let's take comfort for the next hour in movies and TV. And this week in TV, I was watching this.
Hey, excuse me.
That's display only.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to try it on.
It's not for sale.
I know. You've made that really clear. Could you grab me one from the back?
No. Because that's actually the last one.
Okay, good. Then I want to buy that one.
Can you leave it alone? It's not for you, okay?
Seriously? It's a cheap necklace in a cheap store.
Yeah.
Who's it for if it's not for me?
Then get the out of here.
Oh,
okay. Whoa. Morgan, can you just accept the fact that this isn't some hot New York boutique?
A hot New York boutique? What, are you addicted to humiliating yourself? By the way, you can wish this was a hot New York boutique.
Get your wife under control now.
All right, she's not my wife. I'm the pastor at Glenview mother. Community Church, and even if she was, I don't think we need to get hostile.
Even if I was.
Oh, Morgan, please.
You're a very rude woman.
You're a very rude woman.
Morgan, wait outside.
Funny clip there, I think you'll agree. From the new Netflix series, Big Mistakes. This is getting plenty of column inches and attention because it's from The Mind, co-written anyway, and starring the great Dan Levy. Dan Levy has done plenty of things, but he will be known as the star, one of the stars and the co-creator of the glorious Schitt's Creek, one of the best comedies of the last 10 years. And this is his new series on Netflix called Big Mistakes. And in it, he plays a kind of uptight, he's a bit nervy, let's say, pastor, religious guy to a congregation who's keeping his boyfriend secret from his flock and indeed his family. And his family, you heard his sister there, Morgan, she's a school teacher, played by Taylor Ortega. He also has a mother who's quite highly strung, Laurie Metcalf. Who a lot of people know from Roseanne, and his mother's running for mayor of the local town. And that's the kind of family dynamic. They kind of spark off each other in humorous ways. But the genesis of the plot in this is that they, in that clip you heard there, they're in this shop and his sister goes to buy, Morgan goes to buy a necklace, a fake necklace, to put on her grandmother's dead body. The grandmother's recently died for the funeral. Turns out that necklace belonged to some pretty rotten people. And then over the next 8 episodes, this brother and sister duo get involved with crime and they have to carry out jobs for this crime gang that they inadvertently get involved with because of stealing this necklace. And it's pretty funny. It's 8 episodes. It got really good at the end. I watched them all quite quickly. They're only 30 minutes. I mean, it's slightly daft in that, you know, they get caught up with this crime family, but they could easily get out of it. So the plot's a little spurious in that way. That said, I did laugh a fair few times. Daniel Levy is great in this. And he just has a look when people do things he doesn't agree with. He has this look of humorous disdain, which is brilliant. He's great at Taylor Ortega is brilliant as his sister Morgan, who's, without giving a spoiler, seems to kind of enjoy this little life of crime they're in. So it's not as good as Schitt's Creek, but it is funny and entertaining. I give it kind of 3.5 stars. So that's Big Mistakes on Netflix. All 8 episodes are up there. Oh, and no spoiler, but a great final episode with a great twist that I don't think you will see coming. It's not a spoiler to say there's a twist. It's a spoiler to give the twist away, but there's a great twist in the last episode. So it passes muster. It's not Schitt's Creek, but it is entertaining. And as I say, it's on Netflix. And talking of funny shows, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Rooster on HBO Max. Steve Carell playing this writer of Pulp Fiction who goes to a college and gets a job there because he wants to be with his daughter, who's a lecturer in that college. She's going through some tough times with the breakup of her own marriage, and he's kind of a man out of time a bit. He's at odds with kind of the modern way of the world, let's say, and it's very funny. But a lot of people have been mentioning it to me as I do the rounds. People have been saying to me that they're watching it and really enjoying Rooster. So I think Rooster might be the comedy of the year so far. That's on HBO Max and various Sky packages. So catch up with Rooster. It's continuing to drop weekly. And in fact, Shane Coleman was saying to me, you know, he loves the way shows drop weekly. It reminds him of old school TV, but he's missing Rooster. He wishes he could watch it all in one go. So high praise indeed for Rooster. So do check it out. And then also in TV this week, I want to mention on Apple TV, season 2 of Your Friends and Neighbors. So we talked about this only last year, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe the year before, but this is John Hamm playing a funny version of the Mad Men character, Don Draper, you could say, in a certain way, because he's this guy who's lost his job from a big financial company. He's split up with his wife, and he decides that he's going to start robbing his neighbors. And season 1 was terrific. And he got involved in all sorts of hijinks, was accused of murder, and there was a lot of heart to it. And it was an interesting concept. This guy who's kind of deciding to rob rich people he was previously friends with. Season 2 returned last week, and it's just as good so far. After the events of season 1, which saw him getting off a murder rap, that's not a spoiler. It's obvious from the trailer. He's back and he's continuing to rob houses. James Marsden enters the fray as this fancy new neighbor who's a lot of money. It kind of has this great Gatsby quality to him. So I've watched 2 episodes of season 2 so far, and it's continuing in a very pleasing, funny vein with a lot of heart. Season 1 had a lot of heart to it as well as laughs, and that it had a lot to do with middle-aged malaise of both men and women. And there was kind of a slight sadness that pervaded all these people's lives in this rich outside New York fancy housing development area. And that continues in this. And there's a nice look at kind of American society. And the person he's robbing these houses with is a housekeeper to all these rich people. So season 2 of Your Friends and Neighbors on Apple TV is just as pleasing as season 1 and gets a big thumbs up from me. So that's what I've been watching on TV this week. Let me know what you might have been watching. You can email us screentime@newstalk.com. After the break, we're going to be talking about the new cinema releases. And I should mention one of those cinema releases is Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, the new Jim Jarmusch movie, which we'll be reviewing. But last week we had a competition where you could win tickets to any screening of that, as in any city in Ireland, and also a fantastic 2-night stay in the luxurious 5-star Annatara, the Marker Dublin Hotel. And the winner of that competition was Maureen Dolan in Galway. So congrats to you, Maureen, and thank you for entering, and I hope you have a lovely time. So without further ado, we'll take a quick ad break and get to those same said new film releases. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. We turn to the week's new cinema releases. This week we're looking at You, Me and Tuscany, a rom-com of sorts. Well, there's no sorts about it. It's very much a rom-com. And the new Jim Jarmusch movie, which I have seen, called Father, Mother, brother-sister, which was partially filmed in Stonybatter. And I would have noticed that had I not been told that, because I actually used to live there myself. That's of no importance. What's important is Cara O'Doherty, film critic to the stars,
indeed,
is in studio with me. Hello, Cara. How are you?
I'm good. And yourself?
I'm very good. And thank you for braving rough traffic conditions.
Rough
to be here.
Traffic, hail, random tractors. It was quite a journey.
You're here now and you've made it. So listen, You, Me and Tuscany, very much a straight ahead rom-com, yes?
It is a very tick the box standard, what you'd expect from a rom-com.
Okay, so what's happening in this?
So we have Hal Bailey and she is Anna. She's in her 20s.
Mm-hmm.
She had a dream to be a chef. She went to culinary school and herself and her mum used to bake and cook, and they had this dream to go to Italy together someday. But sadly, her mum passes away. She drops out of culinary school and she's kind of given up on her dreams. So she's working as a house sitter in fabulous apartments in New York, but it's not her life. Mm-hmm. She's sort of living other people's lives and she's really low on money. So she goes for a good best friend. Her best friend works in a hotel and she goes into the best friend's hotel's bar to charge her phone, drown her sorrows, sit there.
I feel a meet cute coming.
And a meet cute. And she orders a burger in a very particular way.
Okay.
Specifically, honey to go with her fries. Apparently it balances the salt.
Wow.
Be interesting to
honey
see
on French fries.
If this becomes a thing now from the film.
Yeah.
But anyway, because she does this, and I have to look at my notes to make sure I say his name right. Lorenzo D'Amore.
Sounds good to me.
Very handsome Italian called Matteo takes note, because you know Italians, obviously, they're going to talk about food.
Yeah.
They start to talk. It's all very nice. And it turns out he's a wanderer who kind of left his family. He doesn't really give the reasons, but he left home. But at home, he has a beautiful villa in Tuscany. He has a gorgeous family, a family restaurant. Life looks on the surface to be a dream. And he's like, this is my lovely life. The two of them bond. They talk about the cooking, yada, 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 end up in the hotel room. And the next morning, he's gone, but he's left a note and it says, follow your dreams. Go to Italy. Do what you want. Become a chef. Live your life. And she says, well, do you know what? I still have a ticket to Italy. I may have no money, but I have a ticket. So I'm going to go to Tuscany.
He gives her the ticket?
No.
No.
Her mum's parting gift before she died was a ticket so that someday she would go.
Yes. Okay.
She has the ticket. She has no money, but feck it. She says, right, off she goes.
Okay.
She lands in the beautiful Tuscany with $500 in her pocket and nowhere to stay. And she thinks, it's fine. I'm American. It's fine. I can pick up somewhere to stay. But in this beautiful little town where your man comes from, it's the summer festival.
Right.
So there's nowhere to stay. And she tries lots of places and there's still nowhere to stay. And then she meets the beautiful Simon from Bridgerton, otherwise known as Regé Page Jean.
Very handsome man.
Very handsome man. And he is called Michael and he's half Italian. He was born to, this is complicated, his mother was Italian, his father was English, he was born in London, then he was orphaned, then he went to live with his Italian relations in Italy and he's been raised by this lovely family.
Okay.
But he's a bit rude and he's a bit standoffish and he's a little bit Mr. Darcy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah.
So they have a bit of a meet-cute but kind of bit iffy meeting.
Okay, so this is the second meet-cute.
So this is the second
meet-cute. In Italy.
In Italy. And he's a bit like, you're a bit of an idiot coming during the festival. You could have looked up, you know, the old Google machine. And she's like, whatever. So then she comes up with a plan. She has a photograph of the lovely villa that the man in New York talked about.
Right,
and
Mateo's
it's empty.
Villa.
It's empty.
Ah.
So she thinks, I could just stay there. No one's ever going to know.
I'll become a squatter. What
it's
every
fine.
Rom-com needs.
She's like, it's only going to be a few days. It's fine. So
yeah.
The next morning she gets up. She's wandering around. And as you do when you're, you know, squatting in someone's house, she starts hoking around in the drawers.
Yeah.
And there she finds an engagement ring in a box. And sure, she says, Ash, look, I'll just try it on. What's the harm in that? I'll just stick it on. And of course it gets stuck.
Right.
And the next thing she knows, Matteo's mammy and granny have arrived to clean the villa. See her, call the police. There's all sorts of panic. And then they see the ring and they say, you must be engaged to Matteo. And she goes, yeah, I am. I am.
Okay.
I am very much engaged to him.
And we probably shouldn't say anymore, but the story goes
from there. The story goes that we can say that the family are delighted because they're like, it's a link to their son. They embrace her. They don't
Because Matteo's still in New York.
He's still in New York. And they go, fine, this is lovely. And they start to welcome her in. Her lie gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then she finds out that the family that Michael was adopted into was this family.
Oh, okay.
And then she meets him through the family.
Right.
And then she starts to realize, oh, actually, I like him more than the man that she doesn't like.
Yeah.
So will she find love? Will she go to jail? Will Michael figure the truth? Will Matteo come back? Dun, dun, dun.
Tune into the Bat Channel next week. Okay, that sounds like a serviceable rom-com. Is it a serviceable rom-com?
So there's so many stereotypes about the Italians, I can't even count them. So yeah, I don't know if the Italians might be a little offended at some things.
Right.
You know, apparently, which, you know, they like
to eat. And we love it the
best. Everybody sings opera. Yeah. You know, there's one sister-in-law who, of course, is plus-sized and keeps eating food and making jokes about it. And you're like, seriously, in this day and age, leave it off. Leaving the stereotypes aside, and also the fact that actually there isn't a huge amount of chemistry between the leads.
Between Hale Bailey
and Jean, Mr. Bridgerton, who's actually very good.
Yeah.
There's not a huge amount of chemistry between them.
Okay.
But he's handsome, she's pretty, the scenery is gorgeous, the food is fabulous, the wine drinking, the ambiance, and it feels like a nice little escape.
Okay.
You know,
Tuscany looks beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. And the villas they use are extraordinary. There's incredible villas, vineyards, everything about this is beautiful Italy. So if you want an escape and you're looking out the window at hail and tractors protesting in the streets, we may not be able to afford to go to Italy in the future, you may as well go and watch this and experience it. I mean, you're not really there for the plot. You're not really there for the dialogue, but you are there for the escape.
Yeah, and not to be pejorative, but many people would say, you know, a decent rom-com is just that, you're there to escape and you're not looking to go through it with a fine-tooth comb about plot holes or those kind of things.
There are better.
Yeah, okay. This isn't When Harry Met Sally.
This is not When Harry Met Sally, no. Yeah. So if it wasn't as pretty, if the actors weren't as pretty, if it wasn't so steeped in the gorgeous Tuscan Hills, it might lose a lot. But it has all those things, and that's the selling point, the escapism.
And just to say, because as you were describing it there, I thought, oh, this is a movie on a streamer, but this is very much a big cinema release.
Yeah, they've gone big. And I think the fact that it is so beautiful. Now, it's not dissimilar to something that you might see on Netflix. Now, we know Netflix has two levels of things. They churn out those kind of awful romantic comedies, and then every now and then they do a decent one as well. It's on par with Netflix on a good day.
Okay.
But, you know, just for that escapism, I went to a screening. It was a night screening. It wasn't not for the general public, but it was open to kind of competition winners and that kind of thing. And, I mean, there was a lot of people just giggling and happy. Okay. I brought a friend of mine who just, you know, sighed a few times, both at The Sunshine and Mr. Bridgerton, you know. So it has that effect.
And I think even from the trailer, there is a Diet Coke man scene, where the top comes off.
There's actually a couple of those.
Okay, right.
So, you know, there's something for everyone there, you know.
Yeah.
You know, ticks a few boxes.
If you've just tuned in, I'm in studio with Cara O'Doherty, who is reviewing You, Me and Tuscany, which is in cinemas from this Friday, which is the 10th of April. Let's take a quick flavour.
So let me get this straight. You mean some random rich white boy?
He's Italian.
Talented.
So some random rich spicy white boy.
I'm not there.
And you think that that's a sign to fly to Italy tonight?
It's not about him. He doesn't even live there anymore.
But he told me about his big old villa.
Just sitting there.
Empty.
Don't come calling me from no Tuscan jail.
Ciao.
First time to Tuscany?
My first time pretty much anywhere. Hello?
Who leaves an engagement ring in a junk drawer?
What are you doing here?
Arresti questa donna!
This is all a really big misunderstanding.
Dio mio! She's marrying Matteo!
Yes! I'm marrying Matteo!
Congratulazioni!
What do I do?
You can pretend to be his fiancé, or you go to prison.
Either way, it's very romantic.
Yes, a little escapism there with You, Me and Tuscany. Cara O'Doherty is about to give me a star rating for the same said You, Me and Tuscany. What are you going to say stars wise?
I'm being generous. I'm giving it a 3.
Okay.
Slightly just under it, but it's not it's not too far under it. So we're kind of rounding it up. We're giving it
rounding it up
an Italian rosé tinted glasses there.
That is a rounded up. I think that's the first time I've heard that, but I kind of like it. A rounded up 3 for You, Me, and Tuscany, which is in cinemas from this Friday. Now, also in cinemas from this Friday, and we gave away tickets to it last week and a hotel stay, is the new Jim Jarmusch movie, Father, Mother, Brother, Sister. Bobby Kerr of This Parish always says, work on the title. You can't sell anything with a title. It's too hard to pronounce. Jim Jarmusch's new movie with three interlocking stories, which I have seen. But Cara, you've seen this. Tell us what's going on here.
So we, as you say, three interlocking stories, but the three stories, although they have similar themes,
very different.
Are very different.
Yes.
So in the first one, dream casting, whoever thought of this is a genius. Adam Driver and Mayim Bialik are playing a brother and sister. See, I actually want a spin-off just with the two of them and their life. So they're playing a brother and sister, Emily.
But you haven't got to the best bit.
No, I've not gotten to the best bit. They're on a road trip to visit their father.
Who is played by...
Who is, now actually, do you know what? For 2 seconds, I thought it was Nick Nolte.
Oh.
I know, I had a moment, I had one of those brain fog, and I looked up, and then I went, no, it's obviously Tom Waits.
Yeah.
But you have to admit, there's a bit of a resemblance.
Yeah, there is, especially as Tom Waits gets a bit older. I'm just a massive fan of Tom Waits, musically, and also stuff I've seen him in. But anyway, continue.
So they're on their way to see them, and it's obvious on their way that this isn't a sibling and brother who are particularly close.
Mm.
They also don't see their father very often. We gather, there's difficulties there.
Yeah.
They talk about having lent him money over the years.
Yeah.
And when they get there... They're quite awkward, even the hello with their father.
Yeah.
And he's kind of scruffy, messy. His car is a rust bucket outside.
Yeah.
And he's pretty much playing the kind of dodgy owl lad on his outs.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it all begins.
Exactly. And then maybe we can leave it at that. They investigate their relationship through conversation. Then about 40 minutes into it, we move to... Stony Batter.
We moved to Stony Batter and it looks fantastic on screen. Charlotte Rampling, the great Charlotte Rampling,
indeed,
is playing Mother.
Yeah.
She is very posh, full of airs and graces, and she's a famous novelist.
Mm.
And a little bit like in the first part of the she doesn't have a great relationship with her adult daughters, played by Vicky Gripps and Kate Blanchett.
Mm.
Fabulous pairing again.
Yeah.
I saw them with sisters and I went, that makes sense.
Mm.
And they don't spend a lot of time together. And Mother Dearest has organised the annual afternoon tea.
Yeah, they meet once a year.
They meet once a year. And even the way the daughters interact, I imagine that maybe they meet an extra, maybe twice a year, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And
the afternoon tea is incredibly awkward.
It is. It's horrendously awkward. I was squirming in my seat. Kate Blanchett is playing this really nerdy, stuffy woman who just wants to please this mother.
Mm.
God love her. She just wants some kind of affection that she's not getting. And Vicky Cripps is playing... pretending that she has money. She says her good car is in the garage. She's talking about her fancy fiancé, but really she is an out-of-work artist who got her friend, played by Sarah Green, to drop her off around the corner so Mammy wouldn't find out the truth.
Yeah. And then, and this isn't a spoiler because we have this awkward lunch and there are a few similarities between it and the first one.
Motifs,
completely different story.
Yeah.
Then the third one, we have two brothers, a brother and a sister, twins in France and Paris.
Yeah, so Indy Moore and Luc Sabat, they have reunited because their parents have died in a strange accident.
Mm.
And again, very strange accident. And a bit like the other two sections, there's a lot that they don't know about their parents. Now they're dead, they're never going to find out.
Mm.
But they're bonding over what they don't know. And the son has cleared out the parents' apartments. He's found a few bits and pieces. And through that box of bits and bobs, they're sort of trying to recreate some of their past and figure out what they don't know about their parents.
Mm. So, very well summarised, those three vaguely interlocking stories about fathers and sons and daughters, in essence, and brothers and sisters. What did you think of this? I'm curious to know.
So I have this really weird relationship with Jim Jarmusch films.
I didn't know what you were going to say.
It's weird. I get really nervous when I'm watching. Now, that's the kind of the point. His characters are kind of odd and quirky and a little bit stilted.
He's a unique voice.
He
love
is.
Him or loathe him.
And I mean, a lot of people love him so much, but I just feel, I feel full of anxiety from start to finish. I feel like something awful is going to happen. It doesn't usually.
No.
But this was the first time that I got him.
Okay.
I liked their stilted awkwardness. I thought that it's quite moving in that way that, I suppose, do you ever really know your parents? Mm. Because each one of the parents would be the deceased pair or the two living parents. There's secrets there that their kids don't know about them. And I just thought it's really interesting and odd. I do think the last segment, the twins, doesn't quite fit with the first two. There's a different pace there, a slightly different tone. But those first two segments. I thought they worked really well.
They were terrific, I thought, as well. And the way things were hinted at and not made explicit, and without giving a spoiler, I thought there was a brilliant twist to the kind of first story.
Yeah.
The last section, I was so excited by the film up until that point, and I thought the two twins just didn't work. And I, you know, you said you found Jarmusch a little weird at times or whatever, or you were, I said, I found the relationship was kind of odd. I didn't find a filial connection. I thought they were nearly, it was odd. It was like, are these guys boyfriend and girlfriend?
Yeah, I think he was trying to hint at that idea that twins are often incredibly close and in sync.
Right.
But it did come across, particularly at some one point when they're sitting in an empty apartment, so they're kind of lying on each other in a very cozy way.
Yeah.
Then again, it's Jim Jarmusch. Maybe he was hinting that there was more to their twins in love.
Yes.
We won't go there.
No, let's not. But yeah, no, Jim Jarmusch, I mean, I remember seeing Mystery Train like in the 90s when I was a teenager and just loving it. Coffee and Cigarettes, I really like. Some of his films are a bit strange. He does use Tom Waits, which I'm fine about. I did think Tom Waits was terrific in this. I'm very biased. But I'm putting words in your mouth, but I just thought it's that gnarled older man who's possibly lived a dissolute life. I thought he was brilliant.
And he's so mischievous. I mean, you know there's more going on there, whether he reveals it or not, and you want to know more. And I think that's one of the things that Jarmusch has done well. There's a lot of things asked and we're not given the answers.
Yeah.
And I like that because I don't think these particular people will ever really give away their secrets.
No, exactly. And there's something nice about a movie in this day and age where, you know, we live in the age where people are restating plot lines so people aren't not able to follow it. Like a movie that's kind of hinting at things is great and possibly should be celebrated. Okay, we better take a quick flavour of the unwieldingly titled Father, Mother, Brother, Sister by Jim Jarmusch.
Well, it's all good.
Yeah.
I hope. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. I almost hate to say it, but my life's kind of been like a dream.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Good. That's great to hear.
And you?
Me? You know, ups and downs, but everything's it's good. I think. Mom looks good.
Yeah.
Doesn't she?
Yeah. Looks great. Mm. She doesn't look old, does she?
No. I think she looks great.
Yeah, she does.
Yes.
Yeah, amazing.
I'm in studio with Cara O'Doherty, who's been to see it, as have I. So, stars time.
I'm going with the four, even though I'm uncertain about that last act.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I think I've ever given Mr. Jarmusch a 4-star.
Might
be converted. I might have to look back over his back catalogue again and see now.
Well, for what it's worth, I was actually going to go 3, but talking it out with you now, I still think this is better than most things in the cinema. Well, but I loved it in lots of ways, apart from the final act. So I would go along with 4 stars. That is 4 stars from Cara O'Doherty and myself. 4. One more time. Father, mother, brother, sister.
Brother. I got it wrong.
Is it sister, brother?
Brother, sister. That's one of them.
But we're both giving it 4 stars. Tom Waits is great. Adam Driver is great in as well.
Who's also now becoming a Jarmusch regular.
Yeah.
And it's the third time.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I just thought Cate Blanchett as the kind of slightly anxious daughter to opposite Charlotte Rampling.
I just wanted to hug her.
Yeah, I know.
Somebody needs to hug that woman. That's what she needs.
And you're left with that story of wanting to like make a follow up. I'd love to see what happened to them after this.
And I really
do.
I want to see an Adam Driver, Maya Mbalik spin-off as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic.
So we're both left with a sense of wanting more, which is a good sign. But we've got all we've needed from Cara O'Doherty, who gave 4 stars. And before that, she gave You, Me and Tuscany 3 stars. Thanks a million, Cara. Cara O'Doherty there. Reviewing Father, Mother, Sister, Brother. That's the correct title. Father, Mother, Sister, Brother. Complicated title. Well, for the likes of me anyway. But the important thing is it's a very good film. The last part notwithstanding. She gave it 4 stars, as did I. And before that, a rom-com that just about gets by called You, Me and Tuscany. And both of those films are in cinemas now. Up next, one of our great actors, Lorcan Cranitch. Now, you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. Now, I've waited a while to talk to my next guest, for it seems that I've been watching him on TV and in films for the last 45 years. Lorcan Cranitch first came to prominent attention for the deeply unpleasant character Beck in The Brilliant Cracker back in the 90s. He would go on to be in everything from Ballykiss Angel, Bloodlands, The Crown, Bad Sisters, Vera, Inspector Lewis, and Dancing at Lunason. In the last few years, it seems that I've also seen him in every Irish movie we featured on this show, from Lakelands to Tarik and Rosie and Frankie. He'll next be seen in Three Urns from April 17th, in which we see Ciarán Hinds star as a widow who returns to Ireland from France in order to carry out a pilgrimage on his wife's behalf, meeting some very strange and wonderful characters along the way. Lorcan plays Ciarán's brother in the movie. I'm delighted to say that Lorcan joins me now to talk about Three Urns and some of those extraordinary 45 years. Lorcan, has your life just rushed in front of you there as I went through all that?
It was quick, all right, I have to say. It's hard to believe that I'm still at this. But I suppose I try not to look back on it. I try not to count it until it comes up and hits me now and again. Yeah. But, I suppose I'm of an age now where I'm looking to, you know, try and hang on to what youth I had. I mean, certainly, you know, Romeo is gone. I won't be doing that, but I'm hanging on, you know, but it's a lot. Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, it made you feel like a drowning man. Come here, let's start briefly then with, or not briefly, but with Three Urns. I watched it yesterday. It's a madcap kind of ride. I was saying to you before we came on air, there's maybe touches of Flann O'Brien in it. It's Ciarán Hinds coming back from France where he lived with his wife. And I don't want to give too much away, but he has to carry out some of her wishes. But he meets some odd characters along the way, somewhere in Northern Ireland, Donegal area.
Yeah, yeah. It's Ulysses Light in some sort of way. because crossed with, you know, planes, trains and automobiles.
Yeah.
And as you say, he is returning, having spent most of his married life in southern France, and he's returning to lay his wife's ashes to rest. And he meets people who he has never met before, and he meets relatives of his that he hasn't seen for an awful long time. And it's just a sort of celebration of her life as much, I suppose, as you know, as his, and who he has lived with and been through, and the people of the country, and what has shaped him and what shapes us in many ways. I mean, and that's sort of supported hugely by the soundtrack, which is just a great collection of stuff. And of course, one of the directors, Stephen Warbeck, is the consummate musician and composer himself. Mm-hmm. Oscar winner, by the way. It's a very rich take, a rich view of us as a country, or people of the Western Seaboard. And Lord Fáilte would do well now to snap up.
They should start selling it on planes flying out of New Jersey somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Don't speak too soon. I can see it already.
And tell me this, poetry is kind of one of the motifs in it as well. I presume as a man schooled in the arts, that was a pleasing thing in the script for you.
Ah, yeah. I mean, when you're given great lines to say, as an actor, it's what I relish most about what I do for a living. Is that, you know, if you're asked to be in a Shakespeare, even wherever it is, you know, could be on the back of a bus, and but it's the opportunity to deliver brilliant language is always just so, it's such an attraction. And when it pops up in a film, it kind of is, it's a wonderful little sound. It's a wonderful piece of music to the film as well, you know what I mean? And and there's quite a lot of it in this. As I say, the musical soundtrack and the locations. It's a lovely reminder of who we are and what we have managed and what we have become and what we are best at.
I was just reading up on you this morning. You went to RADA, giving you that Drowning Man feeling. But, you know, to me, RADA in the 1980s seems kind of like an unimaginable place for a boy from Dublin or a young man to head off to. Did you feel, I don't know, like some kind of astronaut or something when you got accepted into RADA?
Was a funny thing. And actually, you know, the only person I'd ever met who'd been to RADA before that was actually Ciarán Hinds.
Okay.
And because I've known him for an awful long time. And when I was still deciding what I wanted to do with my life, sort of dipping my toe into this business, it was suggested to me that you might benefit from some training somewhere. And way back in the 1980s, in the late 70s, the 1980s, there were no schools in Dublin. There was no Gaiety school, there was no Lear, there was no drama schools as such. Yeah. And so the only thing that you could do was go away. And there was a selection in London, and I, unbeknownst to my parents, did a bit of detective work and found out the process and how you get into it and the prospectus for it and all that sort of stuff. It was a bit of a shot in the dark. I went over and I auditioned for them, and at that time there was a huge application from all over the world, and I really felt, to be absolutely honest, I felt completely out of my depth, and I didn't know. There was a big part of me did not know what I was doing, and I thought I was making an idiot of myself. I think there was one other Irish actor who'd actually gone and auditioned, but I was in the same year with Fiona Shaw.
Right.
So we were the two token Irish people in the whole place. And since then, though, there's been, as you quite rightly observed, there's been quite a train of people through the place, through the building.
Yeah.
One of the most bizarre statistics is the fact that Michael McElhattan, who was 3-4 years behind me in school in Terranure,
uh-huh.
Aidan McArdle, who was also a few years behind me in school, they went and they applied and they went as well. So that within the space of about 8 years, there were 3 pupils from Terranure College went through RADA.
Okay, right.
But it was a big thing, but now we're, you know, we're kind of, drama schools are well established here.
Yes.
Here is fantastic, and there's some churning out, obviously, as we see, you know.
Indeed. It's boom time, baby, yeah, as they say. Yeah. Listen, I know everyone talks to you about Cracker, but I adore that show, and I've raved about it on shows all over this station and elsewhere, because I just think it's one of the greatest TV shows ever put together. And, you know, in an age of prestige TV, you know, when people talk about The Sopranos and Breaking Bad, but to me, Cracker, you know, was one of the first people to hold that flag. But yeah. One thing I hadn't realized was, despite the success you were having in that and how lauded that show was, it was your idea to call time on Beck, your character, who was a pretty unpleasant character.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? You said,
well, I mean, there was a few of us involved in the conversation, to be honest with you. The producer and my agent and Jimmy McGovern himself.
Mm.
Basically, the storyline went that my character was guilty of raping a co-worker, Ken Halligan. That was a sort of story that was strung out over a couple of episodes. And I think that they'd invested so much in it, I couldn't quite understand how, if we went back to do a third series, which is what they were going to do, how those two people could work side by side again. You know, something they'd have to give. And my character, Jimmy, had gone off for psychiatric assessment for a while, but once they'd gone back to working in the same, it just didn't seem to work. So one of us had to go, had to, somebody, and I kind of was keen to get out while the iron was hot, if you like. You know, the thing that also worried me is if you did somehow manage to have the two of them working side by side for a while, after a period of time, that crime would have been forgotten about or lessened or something or taken over by other things. And I didn't think that was right. So myself and my agent and the producer and Jimmy McGovern had a, you know, we chatted about it for, you know, quite a few weeks and stuff like that. And as it happens, Jimmy was leaving the show. He said he'd written enough and there was a couple more episodes to go. So he was leaving and he was going to go. And I said, well, look, if you're going, you're the guy who understands this character more than anybody.
Yeah.
So therefore, I think I'm going to go too.
Yeah, okay.
And he said, well, if you are, I'll give you a good exit.
Well, I was just going to say, that was some exit. It was one of the most gripping pieces of TV where you're driving in a car on the radio. But look, viewers will have to see about that. I remember talking to Robert Carlyle
a couple
years ago, and I think he was quietly relieved that I didn't start talking to him about Train Spotting and I started talking to him about Cracker instead. But he said it was such a big show for him because at that time in British TV, there hadn't been a lot of accents like his on
the show.
Was it the same with you? Because you sounded like a dub.
The original name that they gave me, the character's name was, his surname was Pitt, as in William Pitt. And I thought, well, okay, so where's he from? And blah, 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 you know, all that sort of stuff. So, and then they thought, well, you know, he could be Irish. And so we made up this history about the guy who had actually been of Irish parentage or some, so his parents were Irish and in living in Manchester and things like that. So he had a strong Irish accent that way. They sort of ran with that. And it was not something that I kind of wanted to make a point of, but it was good. It was good to have that mix in it, you know, and, you know, Robbie Carlyle was just astonishing the thing as well. He really was.
He certainly was.
Well, he is. Just is, you know.
Yeah. Listen, let me take it slightly more up to date. I mentioned the slew of recent Irish movies you keep cropping up in. In Rosie and Frank, the Irish language one from, it's a good few years ago now at this stage, and I know it was made in 2019. And it's this story about you and a woman and a dog, and it's great fun.
It wouldn't be me and a woman and a dog. It'd be the woman and the dog, and then I turn up later
as a creepy neighbor.
Yeah.
But my understanding is, you know, it's an Irish language movie, but you're not a Gaelgore. So
I wouldn't. Well, I would. I mean, you know, Tá Gaelge Scoileagam. You know, so I wouldn't be, you know, put my hand up saying I'm a complete Gaelgore by any means. But I was well supported in the whole process. Yeah. And I did some homework and I did what I needed to do. It was just a fantastic thing to be involved in. I loved it when I saw it. I just thought it was just a joyous piece of work. And Brittany Nocton is just such an amazing actress. She really was. And as indeed was Bailey, the dog.
Who was a proper dog, no CGI, we should say.
A proper dog. A Brit, I might add.
Oh, dear.
It was just extraordinary, the way they got that dog to do well. It was fascinating to watch. It really was amazing. But I loved it, and I loved the film, and I was so thrilled when it did as well as it did. And, you know, as a result of it, they asked me to be in Tarrock, which set down in Kerry. About the naval racing, and that was just I was thinking, hang on, lads, I better just, you know, take my foot off the gas here, because somebody's going to ask me to present a documentary or something else great. Then I'd be really.
We're getting uncomfortable.
We're getting uncomfortable here. Yeah.
So, and listen, you're 66 years of age now, it seems.
I know, that's, you're bang on. Yeah.
I'm bang on. The internet didn't lie, as it so often does. You're busier than ever, it seems. Pretty much been working solidly since Cracker. But like, is now a particularly good time? Or as I say, is that just us looking in?
Funny thing, sometimes it's like the buses and sometimes it just flows. But I mean, a few years ago, about 6 years ago, I was in a bizarre situation where I was doing a play in the Galway Arts Festival, which happened just immediately. It coincided with the Galway Film Fla,
right,
in which I appeared in three different things in the Galway Film Flat. So, but it's just that they were all launched at the same time. Do you know what I mean? They were made over a much longer period of time.
Of course.
And so, you know, what I might be doing now, we may not see it for years, and that's always the way.
Yeah.
I think also that a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, the film and television industry in this country is booming. Jesus, yeah. It's absolutely amazing. I mean, I'm sitting here in my house in Harold's Cross, and literally across the road, there is two huge lighting bands, and they're making a commercial or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so thanks to not only just the Collins and the Brendans, but the Jessies and the Paul Mescals and everybody, you know, Killian, and we've put this place very, very much so, very much on the map. And it's just fantastic. There's so much stuff going on. And for somebody who can, I mean, I'll string a few sentences together. And so that's why I'm kind of kept at it, you know.
Yeah. I think,
you know.
Well, I hope you stay at it. Finally then, you know, every actor probably I notice over the years has a thing or something that they might do well or in a particular way. I remember talking to Peter Coonan a while ago, and I said to him, you know, menace. There's something about his facility for menace. And a name drop here, I remember talking to Kevin Bacon last year, and I was saying to him, there was something about his smile, that his smile is quite, it's very evocative. It can be angry, it can be sad, it can do all sorts of things. And I hope this won't sound reductive, but you seem to do in lots of things a kind of pissed offness very well, an irritability that you could anger easy this character. Have people suggested that to you before, that you have a good facility for being irritated easily?
You know, particularly since the Jimmy Beck thing and stuff like that, there was a long period where I was just cast as, you know, the shadowy, dark, nasty guy. A couple of ways you can approach that. You can actually keep going at that.
Yeah.
Or else try and vary it, or, you know,
put
another colour in the mix. And that's kind of what I've been trying to do. Maybe I'm failing. And
no, I think, no. But I mean it as a particular skill, you know?
No, sure. I think that it's... one thing that I believe about playing characters truthfully is that we draw on a piece of humanity. Mm. And humanity is not beautiful, and particularly in an industry that celebrates good looks and fashion and all of that, I think it's important to remember that human beings can be ugly at times. Mm. And that, you know, that's as true a thing as our hero or our heroine, you know. We've all, you know, to some extent, we have a capacity within us, and people unfortunately have a huge capacity for it. And it's just what I try to bear in mind when I'm doing it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you continue to do it very well. Three Urns is in cinemas from the 17th of April. I've been talking to one of its cast, Lorcan Cranage. Lorcan, it's lovely to talk to you, and continued success.
Thank you very much indeed, John.
The great Lorcan Cranage there talking to me about his acting life and times, which is now going, his acting life, that is, for more than 45, 46 years. And he was talking to me about all of that. And of course, the film that he's in called The Three Urns, which is in cinemas next week from the 17th of April. That is it for this week. Next week on the show, I'll be talking to the young offenders themselves, Chris Whalley and Alex Murphy. We'll be back to our regular time of 6 p.m. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can email us, screentime@newstalk.com. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend. Have a safe week ahead. Leave you with a little music from the movies and from a movie we reviewed earlier in the show, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother. It has a great soundtrack. Even though Tom Waits is in it, he's not on the soundtrack, but Anika is. And the movie ends with a brilliant version of These Days. So I will leave you with that and wish you a happy remainder.
I've been out walking. I don't do too much talking these days.